So today's episode is not sponsored, but I did want to give a little shout out to probonoontario.org because we're going to be talking about legal advice and all that kind of stuff in today's episode. And I have used them before to help sort out legal matters. Now, probonoontario.org offers free legal advice as a hotline. You can call in, you can get up to a half hour for free. You can talk about going to court, appeals, employment law, customer protection, housing issues, corporate, and powers of attorney. They do not deal with family law, immigration, or criminal law, but it's a really great resource if you're looking for some help and you're in the Ontario region and you need to talk to a lawyer. I know there's a bunch of different options across Canada as well, so you can always look for something that suits you if you're in a different province. The link to them is going to be in the show notes for you, so that's just probonoontario.org, and then from there you can get their toll-free number. So with that, let's jump into today's episode. Welcome to the Business Gig Podcast, where we talk about all things business, marketing, and entrepreneurship. I'm your host, Callum Brecken, and on today's episode, I have California licensed attorney and tax professional, Braden Drake. Braden works primarily with online and creative small business owners through his law firm, The Not Your Average Law Firm, and his online programs and memberships. He's also the host of the Unfuck Your Biz podcast and is the author of his book by the same title. When not doing business things, he's an avid runner, triathlete, CrossFit enthusiast, and home cook. When not doing those things, he's probably taking naps on his patio in San Diego or watching shows with his husband and three dogs. Braden's tagline is your gay best friend here to help you get your legal, tax, and financial shit together. And hopefully, we'll be able to help you do that in today's episode. So, let's jump in. Welcome to the show, Braden. I'm so excited to have you. How are you doing?
I'm good. Excited to be here. I got my coffee. I'm ready to rock and roll.
Yeah, because you're on the West Coast, so it's early over there.
Yeah, a little bit. It's 9 a.m. here. I usually start work around 7:30, so I'm nice and awake now.
Okay, perfect. I'm on the East Coast. I'm in Toronto, so it's 12 noon here. Mm-hmm. So it's perfect. Perfect time because I'm not a morning person. I'm really excited to dive in. We've never had anybody kind of in the lawyery area, the legal stance. So I'm really excited to be delivering this content to other folks listening. So with that, I want to jump right in. What are the most common issues small businesses tend to run into legally speaking?
Okay, so you know I do like tax and legal stuff. So you want to start with just the legal stuff.
Yeah, we're going to jump into the legal stuff because taxes, you know, you're in the US, I'm in Canada. Uh-huh, there's a broad spectrum. I want to kind of focus on like legal is like general stuff for business. Everybody knows, okay, you should probably have some sort of contracts with this, that, and the other that will go cross barriers. Yeah.
Okay, well, just real quick, I'm going to tell everyone, please, for the love of all things that are holy, have a separate business bank account. That is more of a tax thing, but it's tax season right now. And regardless of what country you're in, if you send me all your bank statements and it's mixed with like all of your personal and your business, we have no idea what to do with that. So little tip there. On the legal side, I teach a concept I call the legal layers of protection. And I always say they're like layers of clothing. So if you live in Toronto, you're going to need a few more layers of protection as far as clothing is concerned than you would if you lived here in San Diego, like in the wintertime, like I do, right? So I like the analogy because it kind of shows that it's, you know, it's based on your personal circumstances, where you are, what you sell, how big your business is. But we do have a few that are called the essential layers of protection, and those are contracts, generally speaking, and insurance. So you want to start there. And then obviously you want to make sure that you're not breaking any laws. So if you're providing services and not giving contracts, that's a problem. If you're hiring a bunch of people and treating them like employees, when you're calling them contractors, that's a big problem. So lots of little things we could dive into.
Okay. I'm really interested in that, you know, contractors working as employees. Speak more about that.
Yeah. Well, this one, okay. So this one it's not even country specific. Here in the States, it's state specific, right? So all of our laws will differ by state. Okay, so it'll be a shock to no one, for me to say that the US is generally more conservative in a lot of respects than a lot of other countries. I know, shocker. And that applies not only to social stuff, which we won't get into because it's not my area of expertise, but economically speaking, that means that a lot of our laws are, they're pro-capitalism and not always pro-worker. But when our Democrats get in office, they want to change that, which also means that the more liberal states here have stricter laws with regard to like wage and hour, how much you get paid, meal breaks, all that kind of stuff. And that also applies to who can be a contractor and who can be an employee, because when you hire employees, you're paying into the federal system with regard to payroll taxes. You're ensuring that they get certain employment benefits. And so they want to make sure that you're not taking advantage of the people that you're hiring by misclassifying them.
Interesting. And so, so because I consider myself a contractor, I do odd jobs. I work for people here. I do kind of like per package, this is what I'm going to do for you.
Yeah.
What would be some major standouts of like, that's not a contractor, you're now an employee, if it's more of a longstanding, like I do longstanding SEO contracts with somebody, they can be years long. In certain places, that could be considered more of an employee. What would the differentiators be around that?
Sure. So the big thing is these, the laws are so, like, I've done multiple hour-long podcast episodes just on this topic. So I'm just going to keep it super, super high level.
Cool.
In the areas with the strictest laws, they use something called the ABC test. And the trickiest part is it's literally part A, B, and C. So it's a three-prong test. Part B tends to be the biggest issue for people. And it essentially says that the person you're hiring can't provide services that are within the usual, I'm using air quotes here, usual course of the hiring entity's business. So for you, if I was hiring you to do SEO consulting for me, is SEO within the usual course of my business? No, because I'm an attorney. So especially if I was hiring you to do SEO for my website, that's like a pretty clear contractor relationship. If I had a marketing agency and I was bringing you in to do the SEO aspect of the full like marketing package that we're giving to our clients, now it becomes much more of a gray area, if that makes sense.
Okay, that does. And is this also an area like personal assistants or like online assistants could kind of fall into this gray area?
Yes. So I have been trying to shout this from the rooftop for a while, because in this online space that we operate in, virtual assistants are, it's kind of like this huge thing. Like all the educators say you need to hire a VA. The VAs are out here marketing themselves. And my kind of hot take that I've been shouting from the rooftops is that this is going to be a big issue moving forward, because it's really dependent on what you're hiring the VA to do. So I, for a long time, had a VA on my team that did operations. Her title now is client success coordinator, and her job was to help facilitate calls, do customer service, and all of that I would have a very hard time arguing as outside of the usual course of my business. So I made her an employee. Whereas sometimes you might call someone a virtual assistant, but really they're more of a social media manager. And then like, is Instagram within the usual course of my business? Like one stingy state auditor might say like, yes, because it's integral to your company, but like we don't provide those kind of services. So I would say no, that's like a little bit more gray. It gets complicated.
Okay, so these are all very fascinating things that I never even ever would have thought about. and that they might also be different here in Canada than down in the US. I actually don't know what the laws and regulations
this is, are yeah, that. This is why people tend to get really frustrated with attorneys, because so I had a client who got audited for this, and there was like 10 different requirements to an exception that the person they hired had to meet in order to be a contractor. And one of the requirements said that the contractor exercised discretion within their scope of work, right? And the auditor was arguing, well, you told them what time to be there, and you told them this, and you told them that. And our counter argument was like, yeah, but they still decided like what lens to use and where to stand, because this was like a second shooter photographer situation. And then my argument was, it doesn't say that they have to exercise complete discretion. It just says exercise discretion. So that could be any level of discretion. So we're always looking at those kind of nuances, which is the fun part of the job to me.
Oh my goodness. Right. And it's so wild. Like lawyers down in the US, I feel are definitely a different a different bag than up in Canada. I think our laws are a little bit more stringent and kind of straightforward, where it's a little bit more of a wild, wild west down the US, especially with so many different states operating so differently from each other. Like, you can practice law in California, but you can't practice law in like these other states. Is that kind of how it works as well?
Yeah, and it depends, because some laws are federal and some laws are state. So because we do a lot of tax stuff, the IRS, that's a federal agency and people file federal taxes. Trademarks are also federal. So with those kind of issues, we help people all over the place. And then, yeah, it varies based on the specific legal issue.
Nice. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about taxes. It is tax season. I mean, this is going to come out after tax season, but we are in the midst of tax season. My personal mentor is a tax bookkeeper, does all that kind of like stuff. We don't talk during this month. She's busy. She's like, I work every weekend. There's zero time to even respond to emails. So I'm like, perfect. That's cool. She helps me walk through all of my taxes. Now, here in Canada, I'm what's called a sole proprietor. So it's just me. I've registered. I can collect tax. I've registered for my GST, HST kind of number to collect and remit tax. But then kind of the next step would be a incorporation, which down in the US, you have like your C corps and your other kinds of stuff. In your specific situation, what warnings would you have in regards to taxes for people who are more of the sole proprietor, or I think you guys have like limited liability is what it's called?
Yeah, limited liability companies. So yeah, in Canada, it's very like you're on this end or you're on this end. And in the US, we have like a few pit stops along the way. So a few more options. To put it in very simple terms, though, limited liability companies give you the same kind of liability protections that a corporation would in Canada or a corporation would in the US, but they're taxed the same as sole proprietors. So it's kind of a hybrid entity. The purpose is in order to give you liability protection without like really complicating your taxes. So for both sole props and LLCs, you file all the same forms on your tax return. It's pretty simple. Got to have your bookkeeping done. They need to know how much income you made, what your different expense categories were. And then all that information goes on your personal tax return on a form called the Schedule C. So people can do that on their own with TurboTax, H&R Block, that kind of stuff. Some people don't want to. Totally fine. We help like both of those. Oh, you do?
Yeah. We do TurboTax, QuickBooks TurboTax.
Yeah, and we have the tax preparer that actually works on our team. She like moonlights at TurboTax. So we also, she's like the person that you would like live chat with if you're having a like trouble with your tax return. So we also do, and I used to work at H&R Block. So during tax season, we do like, we call them tax filing parties for people who want to self-file their return. We just do it on a Zoom call and like answer people's questions.
Oh, nice. Can I ask, like, what are some common mistakes you see small businesses or entrepreneurs making that are like easily avoidable, especially with all these technicality things?
It really runs the gamut. I wish I had an easy answer to that question.
Like, here's my spreadsheet.
I know. Well, the problem is some people are really afraid to write anything off because they think they're going to get in trouble if they do like, you know, step like a toe out of line. Other people think that like anything under the sun is a tax deduction and they'll just like write it all off. Like they work in a coffee shop every day. So they think that they can like write off their sandwiches and their coffee and everything is like business expenses. And it's like, no, like we're human people, like we have to eat. So just because you're working while you're eating doesn't make it a tax deduction. The reality is like somewhere in the middle, right? Is it an ordinary and necessary business expense? So those are kind of the deduction issues. The other things we see, really the biggest one is just not tracking what you're spending. Because if you don't do some form of bookkeeping, it doesn't have to be fancy, doesn't have to be software, but you need to be tracking what you're spending throughout the year. Have that separate business bank account. So if you're not tracking, you at least have the clear statements. But if you're not doing that, then you're going to be missing out on thousands of dollars of deductions and tax savings for sure.
Which is huge for businesses. For myself, most of my stuff, we're in a digital world. Most of my billing comes through digital. And so I just have different folders. I have a folder for like 2022, 2023, 2024. And then within that folder, I have the month. And so anytime a bill comes in throughout that month, I stick it in there. And then at the end of the year, it's really easy. I go through them. And there's usually not that many that are business related. It's more of the bigger stuff or the consistent stuff. And it's usually the subscriptions that are in there. But even that will get you pretty good and pretty done on like keeping your things consistent. The only variables are if you go on a business trip and you're like buying food and stuff like that, you need to keep those receipts. But
yeah,
you know, it's pretty simple. I know QuickBooks has like the photo. You just take the photo, input the info, and then like bada bing, bada boom, you're done.
Yeah, we call all that stuff I have a hard time even saying the word substantiation. So if you ever got audited by the tax authorities here, they would ask you to substantiate your deductions. And so whatever proof you have, that's what you would show them. So that sounds like a perfect system to me, better than what pretty much all of our clients are doing.
What most people are doing. So would you say that some small businesses or a lot of maybe even your clients are kind of fall into this world of like, they have a business, they run a business, but they don't do the little nitpicky parts of actually running the business to keep it sustainable?
Yeah. Well, it's not really sustainable. We see it. So there's a couple different things, right? We do have some clients who are very well organized, very buttoned up. We work with a lot of wedding planners who just tend to be type A personalities to begin with. So they're usually pretty good. We work with a lot of other creatives though. And the people who have the biggest issues, I think, fall in one of two camps. There's the people who started their business and they just ended up being like way better at marketting than they thought they were going to be. This is a quality problem. You know, our friend Amy talks about quality problems all the time. We have one of those right now. She just like kind of accidentally built a $250,000 business like in a year and a half. And she didn't really have time to figure out like all of the tax and legal stuff on her way. The other camp of people we have are the people who didn't really realize they had a business or like didn't really realize they were creating a business. And we work with a lot. I don't know if you knew this, but I started a second brand a couple of years ago called Drag Tax. Taxes are a drag. Hire us to help. We work with drag queens and queer folks.
Oh, they would be a mess for sure.
They're always a mess because a lot of them are just like, they're throwing on a wig to like get free drinks at the bar. And now all of a sudden they get asked to do like a tip spot and now they're doing gigs. And then they don't even really realize until 2 years down the road, like, oh, this is a business. I'm going to be taxed on this tip income. So I should also be writing off like all of the expenses that go into this. And now they hire us. We worked with some like queens who've been on Drag Race and they're sending us just like all of their Amazon logs. And we have to go through it and we're like, okay, but like what's business and what's personal, right? It gets real messy.
Yeah, I actually, you know what? I've actually thought about that before, being like, you know what would be really great is if somebody like had an educational program for drag queens of like, yes, you're a drag queen. Yes, this is fun, like fun and amazing, but you still got to like keep your shit together and like organize your stuff because you could be writing off those wigs. You could be writing off like those normal things that wouldn't fall under a write-off in a business, like clothing doesn't fall under write-offs for, you know, Canadian business because you need to wear clothing. But if you're a drag queen, specifically having things designed and put together for a specific show being hired by it, that I would feel would fall under something that you could write off as a business expense.
Yeah, the rules are really gray. Particularly like the rule for clothing is it suitable for everyday use? So like theatrical costumes you can deduct, but more like everyday clothing, you're not really supposed to. But then if it's specifically for a drag number, you can write it off. But then one of the issues I'm seeing is, well, especially for trans performers, like, well, what if they're buying women's clothing that they would wear every day, but also wear on stage? Can we deduct that? It's kind of wild. I also did a workshop a couple months ago that someone reached out to me to ask me to put on. It was a webinar and they promoted it to drag queens and sex workers. And then I realized that definitely needs to be two different webinars because we had all kinds of questions with regard to that. Because it's also interesting when it comes to reporting income that is both, I like to say, over the table and under the table. Like, how are you supposed to report that?
Yeah, it's always been like that honor. I used to be a server. It's like the honor system. Like how much money, if you are getting paid in cash and that is a cash tip, there's no real true way for them to track that. But if you're getting paid digitally on like most days, everybody has the tap cards now. So they can track that. You get the printout at the end of the night saying how much it is. But there is that kind of like, okay, well, how much do I report? And people don't always think future as well, because the more you do report, and eventually, if you want to get a house or these other things, you're going to need to show a certain income to kind of reflect that. What are some pros and cons against that air gray zone?
Well, the, The pro of not reporting your income is you pay less taxes. And the con is if you don't report it, you have no proof of income. One question I never thought I would get asked when I became a tax attorney was, and do I have to report the, my sugar daddy pays all of my rent. Is that taxable income? Questions like that. Very fun. But to give very real life example to your question, I worked with a drag queen who was making over six figures a year. But their tax return only showed about $40,000 in income and like $10,000 in profit. And they were trying to get approved for a mortgage. And they were like, well, I can afford a $600,000 condo. And I was like, well, you can't on paper and no one's going to give you a loan for that. So now they're going to have to wait like 2 to 3 more years in order to get that mortgage by, you know, waiting that long to show their actual proof of income.
Yeah, which is unfortunate. But, you know, you saved your there's a lot, and especially yeah. Everybody likes to save on taxes. Well, a lot of people like to save on taxes. So let's shift gears a little bit into like people who know they need to get things under control. They know like, I need help. I can't do this. I need to focus on this stuff. What are some like manageable and affordable ways for small businesses or entrepreneurs to cover their asses if money is tight? Like they don't have a ton of money to go out and spend, but they're like, okay, I need to get this going.
Yeah. So kind of self-promotional, but I have lots and lots of free resources on my website, blog posts, very, very thorough blog posts on there. And I also wrote a book, swear warning. It's called Unfuck Your Biz, asterisk for the U. Don't go look for it on Amazon. They're like reselling one copy on there for $200. I don't even have it listed on Amazon, so I don't know how that works. But you can buy it on my website, unfuckyourbizbook.com for $30. And it takes people through our entire framework. So how you should do everything. It'll tell you like where to start in order to not get overwhelmed. We also teach all of this in courses, and we do it all one-on-one. So if you're ready to just hire it out, you can definitely work with us. But if you're looking just to kind of get started, that's what I would recommend for sure, is to start with the book. And then most of our blog posts are actually excerpts from our book. So that's the free way to get started.
Okay. So perfect. Listen to the podcast, get the book. but if somebody was just going to start like right now, what's the first thing you would tell them?
The first thing would be to say, take a deep breath. If you're feeling overwhelmed, separate your business and your personal finances. And if you're providing services, get some contracts.
So I know that you have contracts because I actually have used your contract course system to create my contracts here that I've used before, which works out very nice. You definitely have to go through and like craft the parts that are relevant to you. But having something is better than nothing. So can you talk a little bit about that? You know, it might not be perfect, but what's the benefits of at least having something versus having like just a handshake deal?
Yeah. So just like the importance of having contracts in general.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I always like to say, I think I got this from like a meme in 2012, but you know, like we're running a business, not a lemonade stand. So like, let's get serious. If I hire someone, especially it depends on the services, right? Like when I go to like the nail salon or I go get a massage, I go for some of these like kind of personal services and they ask me to pay on Venmo and they don't have a contract, I'm not that worried about it. If I'm hiring someone for a $2,000 like retainer package to do SEO work on my website, and they ask me to like Venmo them and they don't give me a contract, I'm going to be questioning whether this person is professional and knows what they're doing. Cause it's like, did you just start doing this yesterday? What are we doing here? So I believe that contracts, they just make you look like a more responsible business owner. And they're there to protect you and the other party. So the contract's going to state how much I'm paying you, but it also should state all the services that you're delivering to me, which should be a comfort to both of us.
Perfect. Yes, which is very important because you never know what's going to happen. If you have that contract, you can take it and it's written, it's signed, you're covered. Last question. I want to dive in a little bit to, you know, you're in the US, I'm in Canada. I want to ask a little bit about what if a Canadian wanted to do business in the US, because we're neighbors, we do a lot of business with each other. It's a natural thing. A lot of Canadians do business in the US. Yeah. How do we go about that? And I've heard that like setting up a Delaware C Corp is kind of the way to go, but do you have any advice around that or just maybe Delaware C Corp in general advice?
Yes. So Delaware is the state that always comes up in terms of where you should incorporate. It's because that's where all of the like big Fortune 500 companies are formed. So I'm just like Apple, Amazon, Walmart. I'm assuming they're all formed in Delaware. Haven't actually looked that up. The reason for that is Delaware, they have their own court system for corporations. So if you have legal disputes, you end up going to judges that are very, very well versed in corporate law. And it's not that they tend to side with businesses. It's just that they don't let the like plight of the little man judge their cloud their judgment when it
comes
to
these
things.
Big man like Elon Musk did not get a ruling he wanted recently, so yeah. They just keep it real.
Yeah, they keep it real, but a lot of people want to be in Delaware for that reason. I don't think that that's a compelling reason for most small businesses. So people, if you're in the US, the advice is always form in the state where you live because that's what you're supposed to do anyway. If you're not in the US, a lot of people will do Delaware by default. I don't think it really matters. I actually find Delaware's like incorporation process to be more complicated than a lot of other states for what that's worth. But the more practical tip I can give everyone is a C Corp is usually not the best option for any business that's not anticipating doing like multi-millions of dollars in annual revenue. Instead, you probably want to be an LLC. But even before that, if you're incorporated in Canada already and you're just selling to people in the US, you probably don't need to structure your business here anyway. But
yeah,
that might be a question for a Canadian attorney also.
Yes, I can definitely attest to being like a solopreneur, entrepreneur. I have clients down in the US that pay me. And then I just do all that through like the taxes and blah, 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 and all that kind of stuff. It works out. That's fine. But if you were to say start a startup that you were planning to like take like major and like go to the moon and you started as an incorporation in Canada, that would be kind of like, okay, let's look at Delaware to incorporate because then that, you know, opens you up to funding and investment, venture capital and all that kind of stuff. In terms of like tax laws, is there also benefits in Delaware? Because I know that every state has different taxes. So depending on where you were to register that business, you would then in the US have to pay certain taxes based upon state. Is that correct?
Not really. And this is another big thing that throws people off. Is they think that they can kind of create their own game with the taxes. But the reality here is that you owe taxes to the state in which you live and work. So if you live in California, California wants your tax dollars. It doesn't matter if you form your company in Delaware. And even beyond that, if I form my company in Delaware, I still have to register it. They call it a foreign entity as a foreign entity in California. And now I pay income taxes to the state of California, federal income taxes to the federal government. And I have to pay my annual incorporation fees now to both Delaware and California. So I've actually kind of shot myself in the foot.
If you're in the US, but if you're an outside person coming to the US.
Yeah, then you are not, well, blanket statement, but generally speaking, if you never step foot in the US yourself, you're not going to owe any income taxes to the US. You will only owe the franchise taxes or corporate taxes. It's like an annual fee for where your company is held. So then it's going to make a little bit of a difference, like where you incorporate.
Okay, so it makes a difference. Delaware just is the most popular one because that seems to be where everybody knows their stuff and they have like really good like judges and they know their stuff there.
Yeah, it's kind of just like a hype thing, to be honest.
It's just a hype thing.
To put it in the plainest terms.
They got good marketing and PR.
Yeah, they have good marketing and PR for sure.
Amazing. So after talking about all we've talked about today, is there any like last words of wisdom or advice you can give to people before we finish things off?
Yeah, just, dig into what you got going on in your business, what you haven't done. Do you have contracts? Do you have insurance? Do you need a legal entity? We didn't really touch on trademarks yet, but something to consider as well. If you need to protect your brand name, those are like the four big things that we tend to talk about make sure you're not breaking any laws, and make sure you're paying your taxes. So there's kind of like your six big bullet points.
Yeah, do the work. It's tedious. It's not fun for some people. I like it, but a lot of people don't like it. But if you want to be serious as a business person, you need to take these things seriously for sure.
Yes, agree.
Definitely. Where can people find out more, like website, podcast, all that kind of stuff about you?
Yeah, so my company is called the Not Your Average Law Firm, Not AVG, which is the abbreviation for average, Not AVG Law for short. So notavglaw.com is our website, Not AVG Law on Instagram, Threads. I think my TikTok's still under my personal name, but you can all find it all. It's all awesome. Linked.
I'll make sure I have all those links in the show notes. Thank you so much for being on the show, Braden. This has been very enlightening in regards to like taxes and laws and all that kind of stuff in the US and Canada.
Thanks for having me. Anytime.
Magical. Thanks again for tuning in today. Don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button. And if you really enjoyed today's episode, please consider giving it a star rating. The Business Gate podcast is written, produced, and edited by me, Callan Brecken. That's it for today. Peace, love, rainbows.